and a few more dollars, and we're thankful for you and for all those who contributed, and we appreciate the efforts being made, and the sheetrock will be going on soon. You notice that the brick went on this week, and so a lot of progress is being made, and hopefully in the near future we'll be able to use our new educational annex. Our lesson this evening may be a little unique in terms of a topic. You may not have considered this, but it's something that I think is important for you to be educated on. You might have heard me talk about this before. I'm curious, besides myself, how many of you have heard the concept, and I'm not talking about premillennialism, but have heard the concept that heaven, the glorified state of heaven, is going to be a renewed earth and the heavens on earth. Have you heard that outside of me mentioning that? Bridges, Amanda. So not a lot. Well, I think it's something that you're probably going to be hearing more in the future. I was talking to a brother this morning, and he was mentioning that he had heard this, and that he was saying that it's a big teaching coming out of a denominational seminary in Dallas Theological School. And what we're talking about here is about what's going to happen to the earth, this physical earth that we live upon. And, of course, one concept there is that people are going to live on the earth for a thousand-year reign, and that's called premillennialism, that Christ will come back and he will live on earth for a thousand years in a pristine environment where he will rule from a throne in Jerusalem, and he'll accept worship through the rebuilt temple and things. And then after the end of that thousand years, the wicked will be resurrected, and then people will go to either the eternal state of heaven or hell. And heaven is often depicted in that premillennial theory as a glorified spiritual state that happens at the end of time. We're not going to say much about that this evening. That is a part of what a lot of people say about the earth at the end of time. And I have addressed that at other times, and I believe that premillennialism is a false doctrine. I don't believe that we'll be spending a thousand years here upon this earth with Jesus. And I think that theory, all right, has influenced this next doctrine. And that is the doctrine that there is going to be a renewed earth, or that heaven will be on earth. And so basically it just takes and does away with a thousand years and says that when Jesus comes, as I described this morning, if you take my sermon this morning, they would agree with everything I said, except to the last point, where there is a termination of the material earth. What they would say is that the world is cleansed by fire, it is renewed by fire, and that God remakes this earth, and that we dwell on earth in a pristine or glorified material, physical state, no sin. We have access to the tree of life, so there is eternality, that we never cease to exist. And we are immortal in that sense. We have a new body, and oftentimes that is that spiritual body in 1 Corinthians 15 is described as being alive by the Holy Spirit. And we live here on earth for a thousand years, and we still, in some ways, have many of the things of the earth. Now, this has become popular in recent years by Randy Alcorn and Norman T. Wright's material. Randy Alcorn is not in our brotherhood, but he wrote a book about heaven where he really popularized many of these things. N.T. Wright is a pretty popular writer. And then in our brotherhood, John Mark Hicks, who teaches at David Lipscomb University, has done a lot of talking about this. And I watched, in preparation for this, this has gotten to be, as I mentioned, more popular. I watched a lecture at the Pepperdine Lectureship. It's on YouTube. You can watch it too. Just type in Rick Ashley, Heaven. And I actually typed in Heaven on Earth. And this was one of the lessons that came up. And Rick Ashley, who is the preacher at the Hills Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas, which is a pretty liberal church, but is a very large church, over 2,000 or 3,000 members. And he, in that Pepperdine lecture, which was 2013, strongly advocates that heaven is going to be on earth. And so he says that every, I'm quoting here basically, every molecule that God has made is going to be redeemed for his purpose. And he kind of makes light of how we often tell jokes or maybe talk about how, you know, we like golf or we like our thing, whatever it is that we like, our gardens or beautiful mountains and things. And why do we think that we're not going to have those things in heaven? And so it's kind of this concept of overly materializing everything. And so what I'm saying is, I'm not wanting to point out any schools or things like that, but I'm saying that our young people and others, if through Lipscomb, through, you know, I believe this much of this material is coming out of ACU2 and Pepperdine, and there's teachers and things that are believing these things and are teaching that heaven's going to be on earth. And it's being written a lot about more in our brotherhood. And in a denominational world, also you're seeing many of them who have not ever believed this starting to subscribe to this as well. And it's called this renewed earth. And Randy Alcorn would be a good example of that. Now, what is the basis for this doctrine? The basis for this doctrine is, and I'll try to be quickly on this, and then we'll get into why it's not true. It's Genesis 1 and 2. Here's the thought, that God created everything good. He said everything was good, and therefore, man messed up in sin, but he's going to one day make everything good again. And of course, at the end of the Bible, we see man living with God, and we have kind of a material setting as heaven is described with the tree of life there and things in chapter 22, and everything is good again. And so that's the point, that God is going to not throw away creation, as they would say. He's not going to burn up creation, but rather he's going to renew or regenerate creation. By the way, I missed one thing on that. On the last slide, restoration preachers. And I want to mention that this is actually an old belief. James Harden, who was a restoration preacher, David Lipscomb believed in this and wrote quite a bit about this. Alexander Campbell believed in a renewed earth. All right, so a lot of this has a basis even in some of our restoration movement and some of those leaders. And they really focus on the phrase new heavens and a new earth. And we're going to look at these passages in a little bit. But they focus that on this phrase, which is used in prophetic writings of Isaiah 65 and chapter 66, and then is used again in 2 Peter 3, verse 13, that he is going to create a new heavens and a new earth. And so they say that this is talking about the material earth that we live upon. And then Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 25 that was read, they say that that passage is talking about the earth, which is in subject to corruption and bondage now, one day being reborn or recreated. And then Revelation 21 and 22 are also important passages. And we'll look at all these in a moment. Where does this come from? It comes from the term pseudepigrapha, which is the writings written by people who took the names of apostles and others. That's why they're pseudo. They weren't written by the author they claimed to be in the 2nd and 3rd and 4th centuries, all right? And they kind of suggested this idea. It kind of comes from and this is kind of going along with what we're seeing in our culture. There's a lot of push, and I see a lot of value in that, but I also see a lot of dangers in it. I've talked about it before with environmentalism and kind of the push for the earth and sustaining the earth and stewardship of the earth. But kind of what Christians have often done with that is kind of say, all right, we need to maintain the earth and protect the earth because God is going to have this as his place for us to live in some ways. And then it's a very material view of heaven. I think there's a lot of people, if you go back to my sermon on heaven, there's a lot of people who view heaven as is described in the Bible in a very spiritual way as being boring, for lack of a better term. As not being exciting, as being difficult to understand. And let's just be honest. We understand what pleasure on this earth is like more than we do how it describes heaven. And so I think there's this natural temptation maybe to want to describe the future glory of heaven as we think of pleasure here upon this earth. And finally, premillennialism has influenced this. All right, here's what I want to teach, is that the Bible teaches that the earth will be destroyed at His coming. I believe the Bible teaches the earth will be destroyed at His coming. And the redeemed will live in the spiritual abode of heaven with God in their resurrection bodies. It really is not that complicated. And I believe the traditional view that we've had through the centuries is still the correct view. Notice some biblical proof. Now let's go to the Bible. Heaven and earth are described as separate places. Separate places. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 34 through 35, Jesus, in talking of the Sermon on the Mount, mentions this. He says, "But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is His footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King." Notice that Jesus describes heaven and earth as separate and doesn't indicate that there's going to be a time when they're joined. Chapter 6, verse 10. "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And then chapter 6, verse 19, Jesus says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven." So Jesus describes heaven and earth as separate places. And I think John 14, 1 through 4 is probably the most important and the simplest passage to debunk this false doctrine. Look at John 14, verses 1 through 4, which was my text a few weeks ago when I preached on heaven. "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house," in God's house, where God lives, heaven, "there are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you." Now notice this. "I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again." Now listen. If Jesus would have said, "I'm going to come again and live with you," then it'd be a different doctrine, wouldn't it? It'd be heaven on earth. But notice what Jesus says. "I'm going to come again, and I'm going to take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." Jesus says, "I'm going to the Father." Obviously, He's going to ascend to the Father, live with the Father in the Father's house. He says, "I'm going to come again, though, and I'm going to get you. But I'm not going to stay with you. I'm going to take you to live with me in the Father's house. And don't worry about it, because there's an abundant amount of room there. There's many rooms there." So it seems to me that it's very clear that Jesus is saying that heaven is where God is, and that when you will be faithful to me, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one can come to the Father except through me. I'm going to come again and take you to live with me in the Father's house. And then in Philippians chapter 3, verse number 20, Paul says that our citizenship is in heaven. Our citizenship is in heaven. So heaven and earth are separate places. Now let's talk about the new heavens and the new earth. The context of Isaiah is referring to the Messianic age. And I'm going to be honest with you. Isaiah, Ezekiel, I mean, those books say some pretty difficult things. But let's look at this passage, Isaiah 65, 17 through 25. He's talking about the future and about what Christ is going to do, what the Messiah is going to do. This is a prophecy which obviously involves some figurative and symbolic language. And he says, "I'm going to create," verse 17, "new heavens and a new earth. For the former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem to be a joy and her people to be a gladness. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people. And no more shall be heard in it the sound of weeping or the cry of distress. No more shall there be in an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not fill out his days. For the young man shall die 100 years old, and the sinner 100 years old shall be accursed. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build, and another inhabit. And they shall not plant and another eat. Seems the idea is that God is saying in agricultural terms, He's going to bless Israel again. He's going to bless them again. And in the concept of this, the context, excuse me, of Isaiah here, he's talking about the Messianic age. He's talking about when the Messiah comes. As if you go back just to, you know, a lot of these chapters are dealing with this concept of the Messiah and His coming. And so the latter half of Isaiah has that as its dominant theme. And so he's saying, I'm going to do something that's new. I'm going to create a new heavens, a new dwelling for you, and a new earth for you. And then in chapter 66, the second time it's used, you have the same general idea. When he says, for as the new heavens and the new earth that I make shall remain before me, says the Lord, so shall your offspring and your name remain. From the new moon to the new moon, from Sabbath to Sabbath, all flesh shall come to worship before me, declares the Lord. It seems that what God is saying through the prophet Isaiah is that I'm going to do something new. And he uses this term, new heavens and a new earth, to speak of it. And so I would categorize it as the new realm that's going to replace the law of Moses. It's the age of the Messiah. And then let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3. This is a key text. 2 Peter 3, verses 1 and following, or verses 13 and following. Verse 13 says, but according to His promise, we are waiting, according to this promise, we're waiting for the new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. It seems that Isaiah takes this phrase from Isaiah. Excuse me, it seems that Peter takes this phrase from Isaiah. And just as Isaiah had used it to say, we today are waiting for the coming of the Messiah, when God's going to do something new. So Peter says, we're waiting today. We're hastening that when God's going to do something new. He's going to usher in the final kingdom, the final heavenly kingdom. And so he says, when he brings on his new heavens and a new earth. Now, I want you to know that in context, it's very clear that this new earth is not a renewed or regenerated old earth. But notice, in this passage, you have it very clearly stated that this earth is going to pass away. Look at verse number 10. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and the heavens, now once again, heavens in this passage, in this context, is indicating this physical heavens, because it's plural and it's talking about this earthly heavens, is going to pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the work and the earth and the works that are done on it will be burned up. And there is a little issue here, there's an issue exactly how should it be translated, which word exactly should be used, whether it should be burned up or exposed. Are all the works of the earth going to be exposed or shown? And so it's clear that he's saying that it's going to pass away. If you go to Matthew chapter 25, this is the same concept that's used by Jesus when he says, in that context, that heaven